Welcome back to Current State from WKAR. The Latinx community is small but mighty here in mid-Michigan. And this week, many leaders came together to talk about their influence at the LEAD State Conference. We are now going to talk with Patricia Moreno, and she's a local video journalist and activist, and she took part in the state conference. Thank you for joining us on Current State.
Thank you for having me.
So what did you talk about? This was a whole bunch of political leaders, but everyday folks as well. What did you address in the
panel?
Yes.
That I was a part of? I was part of the media panel, and what we made available were just some tactics and just training and really 10 points that people can use to enhance their event or whatever that they're organizing. Ways to use the media in a way that will help propel their event and promote it so that they get a good turnout for whatever it is that they're organizing. And then we also made ourselves available for further training for anybody who's available. And so we are creating further workshops, we being the some of us on the media panel, so that we can really train our people to be powerful with their social media and take back and make some real news, right, instead of the propaganda that our commander-in-chief is spewing with that fake news.
You know, you're a person who's very cognizant of media images and the way the Latinx community is portrayed and out there and covered. You know, what are some things, some misconceptions, and what are some stories that are not being told?
Well, some misconceptions. I think we need to really be aware of dog whistle politics, right? And so if I say an immigrant or that Muslim person, you already have an image in your head, and that's not an accident. We were training you that way, you know, that the powers that be or those that knew what dog whistle politics were, going back to the George Wallace days, right? But some of the things that some people, the stereotypes are that they're stealing our jobs. And quite frankly, farmers are having a hard time getting their watermelons picked because of the fear that has been created. Another thing is that this is all to protect our border, except that we forget that the terrorists came in through the Canadian border, which is wide open right now. We're focused on the southern border, but it's all real rhetoric to get other agendas complete. And I can even go as far as saying human trafficking, because before our eyes, we're seeing with legal means, by legal means, and I say bunny ears legal means, that families are being separated. And what we found out now as activists and journalists is that there's a loophole where the government can legally keep those children and put them up for adoption. So what we have going on here on the side is human trafficking under a legal guise for our protection, our border protection. And quite frankly, we can see that immigrants are actually responsible for holding up, in some instances, our economies in certain spots where some generations aren't working and putting into Social Security. This generation, this whole demographic does and never sees one penny back. They're actually sustaining systems that wouldn't even be sustainable without their labor. And they do pay taxes. They pay taxes every time they buy a car, a house, or go through the register at a drive-in, restaurant, or grocery store. And some of them do pay income taxes as well. Because guess what? The government makes it available for them to pay income taxes. While they don't want them here legally, they're ready to take their taxes. So it's all about the mighty dollar. This has nothing to do with protection. And so when we fall into these stereotypical reactions and we get angry and territorial, why don't they go back to their own country? How come they're stealing our jobs? We need to really think about the responsibility of what's happening. While they're in detention, we're paying for that. While their children are here in tent cities now, we're paying for that. The education that they're going to get while they're in foster care, we're paying for that. And that's costing us more than it would have to just reunite them with their families or put them together or just give them refugee status as well. Because our policies have impacted other countries. And the ripple effect is that because of our policies and really, quite frankly, deporting the MS-13 in the 1992, we created generals back in those countries and violence, and now they're refugees, and we say no you're not, go back to your country. And it's also the third wave of of another stereotype is that children don't come by themselves. They do, as young as 3 years old.
Growing up here in Michigan, what are the biggest concerns for the Latino community? I mean, you know, it's kind of different than being in the Southwest where, you know, it is majority, you know. What are some of the big concerns, you think?
I think, there's two sides to the coin here, because there's the Latino demographic that are immigrants. Michigan is the second largest agricultural state in the nation. We're responsible for a lot of agriculture. And so there's a lot of migrant laborers that come to work the fields. And mind you, jobs that nobody cares are being stolen from us. that's work that we would not do. And then there's the other side of the coin, which is those of us like me who are born and raised here, and particularly Lansing, which is kind of a racist, challenged city. I didn't want to admit it, but then when the Kellogg Foundation gave a grant to just a select few cities that were plagued with racism and to install this truth and racial healing movement, we were one of the cities that got the money. And that was pretty obvious. The Southern Poverty Law Center said, we're in that list. And I realized it when the Sanctuary City Council meetings happened. And it reminded me of 1994, when we were first trying to get the street changed for Cesar Chavez Avenue. And we did, right downtown on Grand Avenue, across right down Michigan. And it became this race war. And never had we seen people come out to city council meetings. They don't come out like that for educational things or even for our environment. But for something as for me, trivial as the changing of a street name because it was a Mexican name, they came out in droves, just like city council. And the ironic thing about the city council meetings for Sanctuary City recently was that a lot of the people that were opposed to Lansing being a sanctuary city didn't even live here. They were from the east side of the state. So, yeah, I can say that growing up here in Lansing as a young Latino leader has been a challenge, because ever since 1994, there was this like huge smackdown where the city, we kind of got this nonverbal communication by the actions of getting our street taken away, and then the whole Q106 scandal and everything. We don't have to go into the details, but bottom line, there was a huge nonverbal communication from the powers that be here in Lansing for Latinos to know their place and get back down there. And so many of my peers moved out of state and became leaders in other states and cities. And for the young Latino leader here, it's been a big challenge to try to contribute to our community.
And you were just part of a state leadership conference on Friday. You know, does it hearten to bring so many leaders from across the state? And when do you see, you know, Hispanics as maybe a political force here in Michigan?
That's a great question. It was exciting. It's exciting to, it's always exciting when we can get Latinos together in a positive momentum, and then also to provide training and education, and then have Latino leaders together. It's really great, and I'd like to see more. I'd like to see a bigger number. I'd like to see us break records next year and really grow. And I think that as far as legislators and Latinos, we're the time is now, right? And what I think, you said how long before I can see. Well, I can tell your listeners, I think the time is now. And like that was the theme of the conference. The time, it's our time. It's the time is now. And quite frankly, that's a question for your listeners, because if not, this is what I like to say, if not you, who? If not you, who? If you or I don't run, then if not us, then who? Then the listeners. It's like, when is enough enough? Are you okay with the wages that you're getting? Are you okay with the opportunities that are afforded to your children? Are you okay with the medical system? Are you okay with, you know, your retirement? Are you okay with the streets? And if the answers to a lot of these questions are no, then if not you, who? Because if you're waiting for someone to fix it and expecting that our political leaders are going to have our interests if they're going to be fighting for our interests, if that's what you expect our political leaders are going to do, I think that we need to pay attention to the corruption from the very, very top. What did we see happen Monday? We saw a man who's unworthy of the Supreme Court justice seat get sworn in the face of a corrupt FBI investigation that from the top, the commander-in-chief, Trump, it was instructing the FBI to do a limited investigation. So a completely corrupt government from the very, very top. So we cannot count on them. We need teachers, people, barbers, business owners, students to be politicians, because those are the people that matter. And if you want things to change with regards to just a regular average citizen, then we need to put regular average citizens in the White House, on Congress, in Congress, on Capitol Hill. Because if regular citizens are not politicians, if not you, who? Because I can guarantee you, if things don't change and they stay the same, it will be the same white, rich, corporate owning men. And they're going to keep crying until they get their ways. And they do. When they cry, they get sworn in to be Supreme Court justices.
You sound like you're running.
I've thought about it. But I think that, I think that anything's possible, but I really am in the business of harvesting leaders and instilling and empowering other people with video, because I really think that video can change the world. But I also think that people need to get up to make a difference to change the world. And the video is a catalyst, because I'm going to show you things that are going to upset you. I'm going to show you things that are going to reveal the truth to you. I'm going to show you things that are going to engage you and hopefully move, touch, and inspire you to get up off the couch and do something. Because quite seriously, it's kind of like, you know, that little fly that keeps getting on the TV. If you don't swat it away, it's going to keep flying. It's like if nothing changes and it stays the same, if not you, who? So I think that your listeners need to come out and vote. And if they haven't gotten registered to vote, they absolutely need to register to vote. And you can do so on the Michigan.gov website. And also get involved in your community. There are tons of committees in the city that you can get involved with the mayor. The new mayor needs a lot of help. And these are great platforms to get training to then for you to run. A lot of us don't really know or understand how politics works. The best way to figure it out is to get into the game, because in the game of life, you're either in the stands or you're on the court. And if you're screaming and yelling, where do you think the screaming and yelling has the most impact? If you're in the court or if you're in the stands. So if you're in the stands, get out of the stands, quit screaming and yelling, get on the court and start making some plays.
I like that. Words of wisdom. Thank you, Patricia Moreno, video journalist and activist here in Lansing. Thank you for coming by.
Thank you for having me. Please don't accuse me of being wise again.